This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. We are back inside the Cortez Kennedy Media Suite here at Seahawks headquarters. Your Seattle Mariners remain red hot. Frank Clark, saw him out there.
He's kneeling.
Yeah.
Kneeling, watching practice.
He was out there. We'll have updates at the end of practice about all of the news and notes that are there. We know that Earl Thomas was not scheduled to be there. I have a question, though, to start this, and that is, for the past 5 years, for the past 6 years even, I would say, the Seattle Seahawks have dominated the discussion of local sports. And it's not always been the case. In the 90s, I felt like Husky football was the most prominent local sport. From about 95 through about 2002, 2003, I felt like the Mariners were the dominant team. But since 2012, the Seahawks have been the dominant story, to the point where even when the Mariners are playing a regular season and the Seahawks have a mandatory minicamp like they did, that's the talking point of it. And I'm wondering if that's changing right now. And maybe some of that is about the fact that you do have a Mariners team that is playing better than we've seen in a decade. And to the point where they don't even have to go 500 the rest of the way for them to win 88 games, which usually gets you into the playoffs. That if the conversation, and so this is as much a question to listeners out there, what's the dominant storyline for you right now? What's the first thing that you think about? And have the Mariners and the success that they've had, have they, for the moment, trumped the Seahawks and the uncertainty about Earl Thomas's future and the question about Frank Clark's contract? Do we have a different lead story?
Well, for me, there's football and then there's everything else. But, you know, right now, I hope it's not. And here's why, because I think that would mean that we're looking at a 500 team from the Seahawks, or, you know, missing the playoffs again, and that it's a rebuilding year, and that, you know, some of the guys didn't step up that we expected to. But on the other hand, look, if the Mariners keep going at this pace and doing the things that they do, just them going tit for tat last night and especially I love that Cruz hit the two home runs over Trout's head after Trout got up there. Did he have two home runs last night? Or just
Trout just had the one.
Just the one, that's right.
Yeah, no, he had two.
Oh, he did. He homered in the first and then Pulhose homered?
Trout homered later in the eighth, too.
Yeah. How do you say that, Danny?
Pulhose?
Yeah. Is that right?
No. Okay. And that's how Gross pronounces.
Well, I'm Gross confused with that, so we'll just call him, what's his name, Alfred? Albert?
Football and everything else.
Yeah. There we go.
Alfred Pulhos.
You were close. Two syllables, and you got the first part right.
Yeah. No, it's what about, you said up since 2012, but between like what, 04 and I guess 9 or 10, the Seahawks were.
They were, but it wasn't the.
They
wasn't
went to the Super Bowl.
They did. I always use my wife Sharon as sort of the measure of this. Yeah. Because the Seahawks were the top team locally, and they went to the playoffs, what, five straight seasons in there? From maybe even been six, 2003 through 2007.
Right.
The five straight playoff. They were the most successful local team. But at the beginning of that, I felt like it was the Mariners were there. And when they went to the Super Bowl, that was a huge monumental moment for the franchise. That team didn't resonate with the city in the same way the 2012-2013 Seahawks did. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a connection that this team, with the quarterback Russell Wilson being kind of undersized and overlooked and doubted, with the coach Pete Carroll and kind of the connection he made with the fans and the enthusiasm he brought, Sherman, who is in many ways kind of like Gary Payton was, there was a connection. Marshawn Lynch, the way he played, there was a real, it wasn't, any team that's good will get popular. Not every team that's good will have the connection to a city that the Seahawks circa 2013-2014 had.
And so you use your wife as a barometer in what way? That, like, if she's interested?
Because
I would never use my wife. Because if I said they're going to the World Series, the Mariners are, she's, oh, that's nice, honey.
No, because I would say I use Sharon as a barometer of how deeply the team has tapped into sort of the local fan base. Where have they captivated her interest or sort of piqued it? And for her right now, it is the Mariners. And she's staying there for 13 innings of a game on Friday night to watch the walk-off home run at the end. And I think that she's becoming intrigued with the personalities and the characters on that baseball team in the same way she got really captivated by the Seahawks to the point where she was in Paris when they beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship game, the tip, and talking trash to the 49er fans that were there in some bar in Paris at whatever it was, like 3 in the morning, when the game actually happened.
Yeah, but would Sharon be interested in the Mariner personalities if they were 24 and 42?
No, God, no.
Yeah, so it and really, it's just all about winning. Because if you're 12 and 4, 14 and 2, whatever the case, if you're the Seahawks. See, the problem I have with it's, and I still think it's a Seahawk town. I still think it's NFL. People are more interested in the NFL and then locally the Seahawks than they are baseball and the Mariners. I mean, you look at the ratings and it just bears it out. And I don't personally feel that way. Like, when I come in here, you know, just to be honest with you guys, I think you guys know, and I'll just tell the listeners too, I don't want to talk about the Seahawks all the time, especially during the off season. And yet, that's part of the job. That's what we're supposed to talk about the Seahawks. I think it seems like 90% of the time, and then we talk about the Mariners. So I don't know. I'm glad to see it, but I don't necessarily think that it's shifted yet. I think we'll get a better idea during this homestand, especially I was curious to see what it's going to be like when the Red Sox come here, because I hate that. You know, the Red Sox and the Yankees when they come and the Blue Jays, we always hear it's almost like it's 50-50. It's not really a home field advantage, and I'm hoping that will shift this week. But
I only hate it when the Canadians come down here.
No, I know that.
I don't mind the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees. I just don't like the Canadians.
Are you going to get another fight this year, Danny?
Probably, and then I'll get really mad when Jim says that I'm just trying to get clicks when I write a story about it, and well, it'll be awkward for everybody.
You argued with the guy from Toronto, I think. He called down here. I heard you over there. You're like, dude. Like, oh, Danny, drop a dude on me.
Well, you know, yeah, and that was the worst time on the air that you and I ever had, but we worked it out.
We love each other, Jim.
Yeah, we do love each other. But no, there's so many
Can I tell him about the break and what happened then?
Sure.
Jess wasn't there.
That was ugly.
We pulled back the curtain.
Well, I left the room as soon as the commercial started playing, and when I came back after having gone to the bathroom and gotten some water, there was still screaming and, you know, go Cougs to one another.
Yeah, it wasn't go Cougs, though, was it? Yeah, a lot of bleep ewing going on. I love Danny. But, no, there's so many new people in town, and so I don't think people can comprehend that the Mariners actually owned this town at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. 2001, when they won, what was it,
116 games.
116. I can't believe I forgot that. It's been so long ago, and I get tired of talking about the past with the Mariners. That's the best thing, is that now we can talk 2018 instead of 95 and 01. But I don't think people can comprehend that the Mariners used to own. They had 35, 40,000 people on a Tuesday night to see the Rangers in 2001. And so, yeah, I'm excited to see it get back. It's June, and, you know, so we're out here. Okay, Earl Thomas, what's going to happen with Earl Thomas? And I understand all of that because there's more people that are interested in the NFL. And yet I'm more interested in baseball and the Mariners personally.
Why?
Well, because I haven't had any players that play for the Mariners threaten me, so that's part of it.
You know what? There's still time. We're not even to the All-Star break.
No, they generally seem pretty cool when they come in, and, you know, if I ask a stupid question, they don't want to strangle me. So I appreciate that about them. I just have always liked. Okay, I love baseball, and I like the NFL, and I love college football. The NFL, I guess I'm just really being honest here. You know, if I didn't have a chance to bet on the NFL, I wouldn't have as much interest in it. I just wouldn't. And, you know, anybody who says, you know, Mara's always talking about gambling. Well, hell's bells. People are doing fantasy football are gambling on it, too. Yeah. So I just, you know, the NFL games to me, I watch them and I'm interested and I pay attention. And, you know, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, I'm watching them. But I'm a lot more interested in what's going on Saturday in the Pac-12 than I am in the NFC West, just personally. But job-wise, I understand that we're here to talk about the Seahawks.
Earlier when you said we're required to talk about the Seahawks 90% of the time, I like to think that we talk about what's interesting, Jim, other than just, you know, randomly picking a number. But, you know.
Well, I did pick that number. Just maybe it was just like you with running backs and how much they have to do with the running game.
It never got to 90%, Jim.
There is something to that, though, of we have conversations about what people want to hear about. We try to have the most interesting conversations that we can, which is an admittedly low bar for us sometimes, about the topics people are interested in. And the reason that I bring up that question of do we have a new lead story in town is I would agree with you. I don't think it's switched yet, but I feel that there is an interest and an intrigue about this Mariners team because of the success that they've had, where people are starting to kind of, they fall down 2-0 last night, where really, I mean, before the game's even started, I was going to say Wade LeBlanc hasn't warmed up yet, but he doesn't really need to get all that warm because he doesn't throw that hard. They're down 2-0, and you kind of feel like, you know, this happens sometimes when a team comes off a road trip and they're not quite ready to go, and, you know, it takes them just an inning to start coming back, and they're a team that's formidable right now, and last night it was with the home run. They've got a lot of different ways that they can win, and you saw that Nelson Cruz is hot right now. And Nelson Cruz, when he gets hot, is so fun to watch. And I feel like while there hasn't been any sort of like passing of the torch, that we have a legitimate local interest that is rising up around this baseball team. And you have a team that has overcome some injuries, is getting some unexpected contributions from some new pitchers that people are learning about, and has some really endearing characteristics. It's really fun to watch Gene Segura and Dee Gordon play baseball. Like, it's fun to watch how they interact with their teammates. It's fun to watch the Kyle Seager, Nelson Cruz, like where Cruz kind of jumps into him. I'm starting to get worried for Kyle Seager because I think Cruz might break him at some point. It's fun to watch how this team's playing.
I heard Seager yesterday. He was talking to Shannon, and he said, well, that's what you do with your best friends. But I always worry about that, too. It's like when they do the jumping high five. I'm like, somebody's going to blow a knee out doing that. But apparently Kyle and Cruz are okay with that. It's kind of a weird sideways hip check or something like that. But no,
Seager's giving away about 50 pounds, though, isn't he?
I don't know. He's pretty stout. He's got a power source.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
But, no, it's interesting to listen to Jim talk about that because, again, like I said, I'm all about football and then there's everything else. But I think that's a great argument for – and I think it's coming if this continues. But, like, Jordan out in the parking lot just now that we all know and love that, you know, works for the valet company, he said – he expressed a sentiment that I think that almost – probably 50% of Mariner fans feel, and that's that I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, that something's going to happen here. And I think that's because of the last 16 years, obviously, but if they continue at this pace or even, you know, somewhere close to it, I think by the time the All-Star break turns, you could have what you were talking about, Jim, 35, 40,000 people at the park.
Yeah, I've stopped waiting for the other shoe to drop. I am fully immersed and not, I'm not even looking at the run differential and questioning what it means anymore. I'm going to give myself over to the moment and watching this team because it's a blast. I realized that about 3 weeks ago. It's like I'm constantly looking at it to say, like, is this really sustainable? And I feel like I'm the person that's like, I just want to dip my toe in the water. How cold is it? I don't want to get wet. Like, I'm plugging my nose and cannonballing in.
Well, even if the other shoe drops, you mentioned 88 wins. If they go 48 and 48, just play 500 the rest of the way, they got 90 wins. And 90 wins every year since they started the second wild card, they're going to make it in. And I'm at a point where I'm like, screw that second wild card thing. Let's go with the AL West. I was talking to my kids about it this morning.
Wait,
what?
I thought you were always just aiming for that one play-in game, and that's it.
Well, I was. I changed my mind, though, a little bit. Just because. So how many games are we into this thing now? 60-some, right? 66?
You just said 48 and 48. You're asking us to
96
do. You're asking us to do radio math.
66.
68.
Okay. Well, they're pretty close to halfway through the season. 2 weeks away. So we'll see after they play the Yankees and Red
Sox. 66.
I know. I thought you were joking.
It was not. I screwed it up.
Radio.
Do
math.
Not do Incredible. Math on live radio.
No. Where was I? So I look at it. And I'm thinking, why can't they beat the Astros? And so everybody out there is going, well, here's why they can't beat the Astros, because the Astros have a better starting staff and they've got a better lineup. Well, do they have a better lineup? Yeah, I suppose. But I mean, it's not like it's all that far out. At the beginning of the season, it was out of the question the Mariners were going to win the AL West. Right now, on June 13th, it's not out of the question anymore. In fact, they lead the Astros right now by half a game. Now, probably over 162 games, that'll come back. But you talk about the other thing. I mean, the storylines with this team, too, what they're doing in spite of these injuries. Now, help me here. I think, okay, Segura was out for 2 games, right? Mm-hmm. Healy, what did he do? He had the plyometrics injury, and so he was gone for
2 weeks.
Heredia didn't have an injury, but he was demoted with that, how they handled that whole Ichiro thing. They survived, with all due respect, they survived having Ichiro out there as a regular for quite a while, and that wasn't a real strength of theirs. They're surviving Cano not being there anymore. Zunino didn't start the season. Starting catcher wasn't there for, what, 2 or 3 weeks? And you expected him opening day, and then we got that news right before opening day that he wasn't going to be there. And so you got, what's his name out there? Who's David?
Freitas.
Freitas. You have him out there as a starting catcher. Haniger, I think, missed some time too, didn't he? You go up and down. Vincent's out right now. Nicasio's out. Altavilla. Scrabble was awful. Felix hasn't been good. And yet they're 18 games over 500. So that's why I sit here and I go, well, okay, there might be some magic and some mojo and Soto and all that stuff going on with this team.
Well, and then we've talked a little bit about the timeliness, too. How about Wade LeBlanc last night? Because there were some shaky moments there. In the fifth, another example of a guy working himself out of a pretty bad jam. And you saw him pumping his fist after he got that second strikeout. But he threw...
Dave, I read that was an 83-mile-an-hour pitch.
Oh, and
it looked like it was right down the middle. Maybe a little inside, but he caught the heart of the plate and Upton swung through it.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen normally.
Yeah. I mean, and
that wouldn't happen last year.
Well, it speaks to the fact, you know what it speaks to the fact, though, is that for all the emphasis that we put on Felix's velocity, that it's about command. Wade LeBlanc can be an effective pitcher, even though he doesn't have velocity. Like, his ability to place his pitches, and I think that matchup against Upton was a point where I'd really love to hear, honestly, how Scott Servais felt about that at bat going in with the bases loaded against Upton. If he was thinking, like, maybe I should go out and get somebody else, I don't know if I want LeBlanc, and he strikes out Upton with the bases loaded, and then the emotional reaction. It's also awesome that in baseball, if you spend even a fraction of a second too long looking at a home run that you've hit, you've offended the baseball gods and there's all hell to pay. But if you're a pitcher and you strike somebody out, like, you're fully allowed to, like, shout and pump your fists and gesture.
That's a great point. Yeah, what is that about?
That's good old-fashioned emotion.
That's another one of the weird things about baseball, like the manager wearing a uniform and that you can strike out and still get first.
If you had the option, if you had two options in that at-bat with Upton striking out or hitting a grand slam, which would you have taken?
What?
Well, I would have taken him striking out because I'm fully immersed.
Prefer?
No, not prefer, but what you thought would happen in that at-bat.
He's trying to make you answer a gun to the head sort of thing. Gun to your head. Yeah. You had to decide likely, an Upton strikeout or an Upton grand slam.
I was thinking the same thing, that they should bring a right-hander in to face him and all that. And then, LeBlanc just throwing in those soft pitches of his.
And you think you can hit him too?
Yeah. I know I can't hit Diaz, but I'd take my chances with LeBlanc.
Well, once he got the pop out with, what was that, like a slider away or something, or maybe a changeup?
Was that Jabari Blash there?
Was it Blash?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, I had confidence. I would have taken the strikeout from crafty Wade. I liked Wade, too.
Wade's fun to watch pitch. The Seahawks are wrapping up their first of 3 days of mandatory minicamps. As expected, Earl Thomas had said he's not going to be here. We'll say what that means. A lot of different stories that I saw today talking about the different projections for the Seahawks. Everybody pretty much projects them at about 8 wins. Football Outsiders, my favorite site, Pro Football Focus, other teams from 538. I think that's an interesting question. Before we get to take two here in just a second, you guys... 8-8, if you had to take over or under 8-8, which do you think this team will be?
Well, I'd definitely take the over, but I just feel like we're concentrating too much on the negative. I mean, let's, again, take inventory of what we have. I really think, and a lot of this has to do with Frank Clark, honestly. Frank Clark has to step up as a pass rusher. He's got to get 13, 14 sacks. But, look, you still got Doug Baldwin. You've got Russell Wilson, and who I think is a top-five quarterback. You got probably the best inside linebacker in the league, and Bobby Wagner. And he's getting a lot of attention right now. It's kind of funny how those things go in the media, that, you know, somebody writes an article and then somebody else, and then all of a sudden we're talking about Bobby. But you go out and watch him out there. He's out there making plays all over the place. He's taking command of the defense. And so, and Shaq Griffin, I mean, look at the players that you have. I know it's going to be tougher, but with Los Angeles and all the things that they've done, and I know this is an up-and-coming San Francisco team, but I'm sorry. The San Francisco 49ers are not better than the Seahawks. And I know a lot of people have them projected to finish ahead of the Seahawks, so I'm taking the over on 8.
Can I take 8-8? Yeah. That, so not under or over.
If you want to take your three wood and drive with that.
Only.
Ooh, I'm Jim, and I'm going to pick eight. Mate. Neither better nor worse.
I can't imagine him going 7-9, though, because of Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, it's just like Tom Brady, and I know that he's not quite up to Tom Brady level, but as long as you have, I've always felt like as long as you have Russell Wilson, whoever the other 21 guys are on special teams, you're still going to have a chance to make it to the playoffs with him every single year. But you look at the coaching changes, the same offensive line except for Fluker, and maybe the power of the changes with the blocking scheme is going to help. The running backs, maybe Penny will help there, but the pass rush has got to be a huge concern. Who knows what's going to happen with Frank Clark? Now, it sounds like he's here today, but he has some concerns about him, and can he be the same player as he was without Bennett and Averill out there?
Let me ask you this, though. How much of this has to do with Pete and people having lost faith in Pete Carroll? Because I'd throw that in there, too. I think you got one of the top two or three best football coaches.
Lost faith in him?
Well,
Besides the two guys that left.
I'll tell you what. I think that nationally there is a feeling among people that Pete's run his course, whether it's Colin Cowherd talking about it, saying, this is how it went at USC.
What's Colin Cowherd know about it? What the hell?
I do think that's happen. And also,
I heard him talking to LeVar Ball today. What a waste of time that was.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
That is terrible.
Yeah. It's on a different station, but if you brought up Colin Cowherd,
that's all you have to say.
There's a feeling among people. I would agree with you, Dave. I think nationally, and people that cover the NFL and look at the Seahawks and think that Pete had his run, and I don't think he's got it in him to build this again.
Well, and that Bennett and Sherman pulled back the curtain on his act or whatever, and I think that's entirely bogus. And, you know, so to me, and I, you know, getting Kenny Norton Jr. back here, I just think, you know, that's something that is sort of taking him down. Everybody thinks that, you know, Kyle Shanahan's a genius. I still picture him as this little snot-nosed ball boy that was running around when I played in Denver for Fire Marshal Bill. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. Until he proves it, look.
They won their last five games with Garoppolo last year.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And that means that they're going to just, you know, tear it up. I'm sorry. You got to prove it first.
And then Josh Rosen, you got to watch out for him in Arizona, too.
Yeah, I'm worried about him.
It is Danny David Moore. If this first 20 minutes is any indication, this is going to be a blast today. We're going to be talking to a Seahawk player at 5 o'clock. It's our mystery flavor. We're not quite sure who it is yet, so you'll have to stay tuned to find out. But up next, we got the Aussie, Ryan Roland Smith. He'll tell us what the Mariners are doing right. Hey, it is Danny David Moore talking to Brock Heward.
Yeah, go do your own show, Brock. Do we barge into your show?
We'll be there. And we are joined now by Ryan Roland Smith on the Venue Kings hotline. And Ryan, the Mariners keep on rolling, and it was Wade LeBlanc last night. This team's starting pitching has been, in some ways, the biggest surprise and the biggest reason they are where they are.
Yeah, by far, especially when you look at guys like the guy who pitched last night, Wade LeBlanc, who that fifth inning was massive, right? When you break it down, you look at Ian Kinsley. If you see what he's done the last, you know, 4 or 5 days, he has been just out of control, red hot. And Justin Upton is, you know, 15 home runs deep into this season. That was a huge couple outs, and that's what really sort of defined what he has done this year, making big pitches in big situations with runners on base. I think the opposing batting average with guys in scoring positions under 200. And that's what has been making Wade LeBlanc so good. And obviously, Marco Gonzalez is pitching tomorrow, and the guy tonight, Mike Leake. The middle of this pack with this rotation, and I've been talking about this all year, is that's what they need. If they want to have success, it's going to have to come down to this rotation. A couple question marks in spring training. They didn't go out and, you know, kind of get that low-hanging fruit that was out there. A couple of these guys who are still free agents in spring, they stuck with these guys, and it's been paying dividends. They've been so good this year.
Yeah, Ryan, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned the fifth inning for LeBlanc, and I just wrote a note to myself because I was so impressed by that. Second and third with only one out, and we've seen that out of Paxton. I want to say Gonzalez did that earlier this year. What's that mean to a pitcher when you see that you can do that? How much confidence does that give you?
It's everything. It really is. And you look at, you know, Wade LeBlanc is a guy, obviously stuff is not going to blow you away. Everyone knows that. And you mentioned James Paxton. Well, James Paxton can take it up another notch, and that fastball up in the zone can be unhittable at times. But with Wade LeBlanc, when you're a guy like him, and Mel Stottlemyre came out and had a chat to him, and especially too after they scored three runs in the bottom of that fourth, and he came back out for that fifth leadoff walk, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, here we go. This sustainability that he's had of making big pitches in big situations might start to, you know, the shine might wear off a little bit. But, man, he got into some trouble, and when you can just slow everything down, and that's what he's been able to do this year. We saw him a couple of years ago, and he was back and forth with that. He made big pitches, but not consistently as he has now. But, man, when you leave a game, and it goes both ways, you might have a great game, but let's say it's the fifth, sixth inning, you know, as you finish up in that last 20 pitches, and you've got that one at bat, and you give up that hit, and you see the manager come out, take the ball out of your hand, and you're walking in, or you can't get through the fifth, or whatever it might be, and the team ties that game up. That's all you think about. The body of work, no one, you don't even care about that. But all you care about is that one at bat. And on the flip side, when you can get that big out, and you know, it's funny, in the post game interview, everyone's like, oh, well, you know, you've done really well against Justin Upton. You can throw those numbers out the window. Justin Upton is a guy with 15 home runs. The bases are loaded. There's nowhere to put him. It's not a situation like it's a second inning, no one on. You have to make big pitches. And that cut fastball he threw, 3-2 count in that situation, just tells you how much confidence he has. And you could see him. He was so fired up, showed some emotion. I love that. And that's basically been the, you know, the story of this year for the Mariners, and especially the month of May when they've crept back in to the race and now they're in first place, is because of that starting rotation.
The starter tonight, Mike Leake, 2.79 ERA, the last six starts. And most amazing to me, Ryan, is that he's walked two batters in the last six starts total. And I would look at a guy like him with the stuff that he has, and I would think, man, this guy's probably going to try and nibble. Yeah. And yet he doesn't. What makes him so effective?
Well, you mentioned that, you know, Jim, with the nibbling, he did go through a period of that. And that came, I really think that the start against the White Sox, where they just came and ambushed, young lineup, and they just kept swinging. He had a rough outing. I think after that, there was a bit of a carryover. In the next couple of outings, he was nibbling. The walks were up. You know, usually Mike Leake's a strike throw, but the walks were up because he wasn't trusting that good sinker that he has. That ball was leveling out a little bit because he was trying to nibble and nibble and nibble. But the biggest key for him is, you know, that strike one pitch, and it sets up that cutter too. He's been throwing a ton of cut fastballs, 0-0, and when you have that variation when that ball's going into that lefty and away from the lefty and vice versa, when you can draw those X's, it's very hard to hit. And if you can command that pitch, you don't have to be perfect with it. If you can go second time, let's say you face a guy once and you got that good sinker and they're diving out over the plate, and then the next at bat, that pitch all of a sudden changes direction and it still has movement, man, that can be tough. And that's what Mike Leake has done so well, and it's just set up that he's got one of the nastiest sliders I've seen all year. It's nasty, but he has to get to that two strikes, and he's been able to do that with varying the movement on that cutter and that sinker. And it, again, another guy, you talk about the cut fastball for whatever reason. I don't know if that's Mel's go-to when they're throwing bullpen sessions, but Marco Gonzalez, that's been, you know, gotten him over the hump. Wade LeBlanc has thrown a ton of him, and Mike Leake as well. That's just been that variation on that fastball, and it's been so good for these starters.
That question of what Mel Stottlemyre is, this season goes on, the impact Mel has had on this starting staff is going to be something we'll pay more attention to. We're making our weekly visit with Ryan Roland Smith here, and Ryan, Nelson Cruz is heating up. He had two homers last night, and you see, this team's got a lot of different ways that they can win, and last night it was with the long ball.
Yeah, and man, Nelson Cruz, you know, you go back when he first got came off the he had that stint, he wasn't on the DL, but I think he got hit in the elbow. And he missed a couple games, came back, and the timing, and everyone talks about that. But you could see he was just hitting line drives all over the place. And I remember, I was like, man, just drop that back shoulder a little bit. Get a bit of launch on that ball. And sure enough, when he is on a roll like this, it is so fun to watch. And when you look at, you know, they're playing the Angels in this series, and this is a huge series, by the way. Look, the Houston Astros are going to be there till, you know, the end of September. But when you look at the way this kind of shapes out, you've got the AL West and the AL East. And, you know, the Central, the Indians are kind of running away. There's really no one else in the Central that's going to, you know, go for that wild card. And outside of the Yankees and the Red Sox over there on the East, there's really no one else either. So when you look at this, it comes down to, all right, who can stay at the top of this division? Who are the two teams that are going to run away with it? And I think, you know, the Mariners and the Astros, when you look at how they stack up, the Angels are going to be nipping at their heels. but they just don't have that depth. You mentioned different ways to beat you. Last night was the long ball. When you have got Ryan Healy in the six hole, who's hit 10 home runs, and then you've got Mike Zunino, who's hit 10 home runs, I'm telling you guys, facing a lineup like that, it is not fun, because you give up a leadoff walk, or you try and pitch around someone, and then all of a sudden the nine-hole guy has got 10 bombs and he can beat you with the long ball. Very tough to pitch to. And that's where the depth with that lineup, as opposed to the Angels, they've got some studs in that rotation. But I think the depth of the lineup with these Mariners is going to, you know, overcome what the Angels have.
Is Nelson Cruz top bloke in your book?
Mate, right. he's a cracker of a bloke. I'll tell you right now, you'd love to crush a few tinnies with him on a Friday arvo down at the pub. Just absolutely, you know, put away a couple tinnies and have a yarn.
Dave,
you and me, mate.
What the hell is he saying? Can someone translate?
Hey, by the way, I should have never invited Brad Adam on the show. Because he's texting in, who's this hack? He says he can't even understand you.
By the way, guys, did you hear he won the Emmy?
He won the Emmy? Best imitation of Ryan Roland Smith?
No, he won an Emmy, Northwest Emmy. And since then, I've tried to talk to him. He just won't return my phone calls. He's big time now. So
did he run unopposed? Did he run unopposed?
I don't understand what that means.
The only nominee?
Was he the only nominee?
That's not an Australian term, Jim.
Sorry. Sorry. If it's not Australian or if it's not in the last 10 years, I've never heard of him. Sorry, guys. Yeah. No. I think it was him and one other guy who has a little YouTube channel or something in Oregon. It was up to him. I hope he's listening right now.
I'm sure he is. Hey, let me ask you this. Because we were talking about this a few weeks ago, Nelson Cruz, he's got to come around. He's 228. I'm not sure where. I think Kyle Seager's right around that area, if not a little bit less. I feel like you can bank on Kyle Seager and his getting some turnaround. You agree with that, or do you think that it's just an off year for him? It just seems like it's got to come. He's too good of a player.
I think so, and I really do think so. And when you look at when I watch Kyle Seager and the team was on the road, and I was just paying attention to pitch selection and the way other, because I always love to watch how opposing pitchers pitch guys, especially when you're watching Nelson Cruz, Mitch Haniger, and guys who are really seeing the ball really well at the moment. I think with Kyle, there's a couple instances there with some at bats where he's getting that pitch to hit, which in his area, in his wheelhouse, and he's just missing it. And I feel like, let's go back to, he'll have those 0 for 8s, 0 for 12s, and then boom, come out, and he won't miss those mistakes. And I think with him, once that consistency, if he sticks to that process where he's getting that pitch in that little area, that no-go zone with him, if you're pitching against him, he's going to get those pitches. And I think when he does on more of a consistent basis, I think he'd be okay. And I think, the other thing is too, so with Kyle, I think I think there could be something coming down to where he's pressing a little bit. This team's on a roll. He's in the heart of that lineup, and he's a big-time leader on this team, and maybe there's just a little bit of that pressing with his at-bats. But I think he's going to be okay. And you know what? He's a streaky guy, so is Mike Zunino. This team's doing great things while they're not quite streaking. Wait until they get on that streak, and it's going to be a couple blowouts here.
You're going to be on Facebook tomorrow, Ryan.
I am. What about that?
Yeah, you excited about that? There's going to be a lot of thumbs up, people hitting thumbs up for you.
Guys, I hope. If you guys try and troll me on Facebook, I'm going to be very upset. I know what you guys are like, especially Jim. No, but it's interesting.
Oh, yeah, I'm cyber savvy when it comes to... I saw this game's going to be on Facebook, and I'm like, really? We already had one of those.
Yeah, it's going to... Yeah, so make sure you...
Gives
sure
Ryan,
you
but you're on it?
It gives Ryan a chance to talk. Yeah, he's going to be part
That's
of the broadcast.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
We're Facebook friends, aren't we?
Myself and... I think we are, yeah. I think we are, actually. Yeah. Oh, please don't troll me.
Did you know that for Ryan Roland Smith one time that I took my kids... He had a camp over in Bellevue. And I had flyers that I put on windshields for people to come to Ryan Roland Smith's camp.
Well, that was nice of you, Jim. Yeah.
He did. And I bring that up every time Amanda, my wife, says, "Oh, I had to go with the guys." I said, "Oh, yeah, Jim asked some stupid question, but hey, look, you know what? He's I can never play it down the fact that he went and put flyers on cars. That was big time, Jim.
That's correct.
That was awesome.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate that.
Oh, Ryan, we'd love
talk
to
you. Want,
we'd love to talk to you, Ryan, and we're looking forward to hearing you on the broadcast tomorrow.
Sounds good. No trolling, guys. No trolling to anyone out there, please. Yeah. Thumbs up.
Two of us won't be able to figure out how to get on.
Yeah, good. That's a good thing.
That is Ryan Roland Smith. It is Danny David Moore. The Seahawks practice has wrapped up. We'll have all the information for you and words from Pete Carroll coming up next.
This is Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Got game two of the Mariners series with the Angels. That's coming up tonight. First pitch, 7:10, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle with the pregame show at 6 o'clock. The Seahawks have just wrapped up the first of their 3 days of mandatory veteran minicamp. Coach Pete Carroll here answering questions from reporters after that practice.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but there was a play today when the guy came flying off the sidelines after making the catch. A Navy guy, and there was an Army guy right in the area, and backed off and got out of the way. Maybe that's why he scored 78 touchdowns in his career or something, you know. So I don't know.
First time an Army guy.
Maybe so. Okay, we're rolling. Minicamp, this is the final phase, really, of all this offseason work that we've had, and it's kind of the culmination of a long process, and so we have a lot of guys out here working. It's great. We're going to get a chance to continue to see the new guys as much as we can to get as much information going into the break. But things have gone really well, and this was a good hard work today. The guys again brought their attitude, and we're getting a lot done. So it's going well.
Pete, what was your reaction when you were informed that Earl wouldn't be here?
We kind of had heard, you know, that he was, he was making that choice. You know, I'm really gonna, I wish he was here, and that would be nice. But we're focusing on the guys that are here, and we'll see how that goes.
When's the last time you spoke to him?
Is
he still in the program with your mind?
Yeah, he's sure.
But I mean, as far as buying it and being part of the team, you know,
dedicated. Yeah, Earl doesn't know any other way. He gives you everything he got when he's with you.
So you expect when the season begins, he'll be here?
We'll see what happens. I don't know.
What'd you say about the overall mood of, like, the training camp excitement, you know, the just ready competition? What would you say about it? You've seen enough of it.
The energy has been fantastic. Really, it's in the air. You know, you can feel that the guys are. Really, they're attentive and focused and involved and having fun. And I mean, you watch, you know, how we do it. The energy out here was great again today. So this is, I don't know, what are we, 6-7 weeks into the work on the field and all that. This is excellent, you know. And the leadership is doing a great job of setting it in motion. And the young guys that are here for the first time, or guys that are here for the first time, they're sensing what it's like to be part of this program, and they're kind of full and on and going and having fun with it. And that's how, you know, we play and practice at a really high level and with a lot of energy, and we've seen nothing but that. It's been great.
How do you feel about holdouts in general? Obviously, you want the best.
I think the individual situation. I mean, the individual case with whoever the guy is, whatever his story is, and you know, I don't see him in a, you know, putting him in a basket. I think you look at each guy and whatever's going on in the history and all that, and you know, you deal with it accordingly.
Is there any roadmap or scenario that you see that can solve this and get back here?
Sure. Yeah, I do. There is. Yeah. Sure. Of course it is. Of course it is.
Hey, Pete, you mentioned Keenan Reynolds earlier. What have you seen from him and David Moore and some of the other guys in the wide receiver room that are playing?
Yeah, well, if you watch practice today, Keenan had a really good day, and he took advantage. We're resting Doug today in this camp. Doug has had a fantastic offseason. So Keenan, in his spot, just jumped out today. I talked to him earlier. I said, you know, pretty good opportunity for you this next couple of days here. And he said, yeah, I know, I'm watching. And he said, I'm going to be there. You know, a couple good positive thoughts. And he lit it up today. So I was really excited for him. He's a great kid. And you can see why he was a leader and a big-time player and all that. And he's going to make a bid for, you know, where he fits in. David Moore has been special for us. He is a very, very good athlete. Came from a really small program, wasn't able to really catch it all, you know, in stride until late in the season. We finally got him out, you know, active the last week. But you can see the playmaking ability, and we're already trying to figure out ways to put him, move him around, and so he can show off what he's got. And he's a big. He doesn't look like it, but he's a real strong kid. Probably 218 pounds, you know, and he is physical. And we're really excited to see him again, like we did in preseason last year with, you know, the run after catch stuff. So, but he's had a very good camp. He's made a big jump, made the kind of the freshman sophomore jump, and it's exciting to see that.
How do you feel about the rest of the young safeties? I mean, without Earl and Cam, obviously, you're seeing a lot of those guys out there.
Well, Bradley has really taken the lead, you know, and just as he did last year when he played, he just picked right up and came in. He started a lot of football games in the league, you know. He's got a lot of background, and it shows. He's very confident, and he's a good communicator, and he helps people just like our guys need to. So he's just embraced that, you know, from the first day. So that's not a problem at all. And then we're moving guys around. Tedrick Thompson has always looked really good on the back end. Delano Hill is another guy that we're really excited about too. You know, when we picked them a couple years ago, we thought that someday they're going to be the players out here, and so they're making their, you know, their pitch. Another kid here, Mo Alexander, hasn't had a chance yet because we're resting him with his shoulder that's in rehab. But Mo's an exciting player to add in here too. He's a big hitter, real physical kid, played a lot of football, and so he brings experience and toughness, and he's almost 230 pounds, and he's a big kid back there. So it's a good group. It's a really good group.
It is Danny David Moore. That was Pete Carroll. We'll get to the rest of his comments and the Professor John Clayton. That's coming up next.